Okay, so we've got a pretty hefty stack of legal briefs and court summaries here. Looks like we're diving into Commissioner v. Glenshaw Glasco today.
Ah, yes, a landmark case from 1955. You know, it might seem like ancient history, but this Supreme Court ruling, well, let me tell you, it still has a big impact on anyone who's ever, dreamed of winning a lawsuit, hitting that lottery jackpot, or maybe even, who knows, finding some buried treasure.
You never know,
You
right?
never know. It's a fascinating case.
Okay, so we're not just talking about some like dusty old legal theory here. This is something that has real-world consequences even today.
Absolutely. This is a case with real-world consequences.
So to really understand those consequences, I guess we need to go back to the beginning. Who are the players in this whole legal drama?
Well, at the center of it all, you have these two companies, Glenshaw Glass Company and William Goldman Theatres. And both of them, they won, substantial antitrust lawsuits, meaning they were victims of some pretty shady business practices, things designed to stifle competition.
Ah, so these lawsuits, they resulted in some pretty big payouts, right?
Right, that's right. And that's where this whole issue of punitive damages comes into play. So Glenshaw Glass received a total settlement of, let's see, about $800,000. But $324,529.94 of that, specifically punitive damages, Goldman Theatres. They were in a similar boat, $125,000 in actual damages. But then on top of that, awarded an additional $250,000 in punitive damages.
So $250,000.
Exactly.
Basically a bonus on top of what they actually lost. I can see why they might have thought that was a little excessive, especially come tax time.
Especially when it came time to file their taxes.
I bet they weren't too thrilled with the idea of the IRS getting a cut of their, like,
Of that extra money.
their bonus money.
Exactly right.
So did they fight it?
Well, both Glenshaw Glass and Goldman Theatres, they argued, and pretty passionately, that only the actual damages should be subject to income tax.
Makes sense.
They viewed those punitive damages as, kind of a windfall, a punishment for the other company, not something they'd actually earned.
That seems like a reasonable argument. I
It
mean,
was
why should you be taxed on money that's meant to penalize someone else?
right.
Did the lower courts agree with them?
Initially, yes, both companies found success in the lower courts. The tax court actually sided with them, ruled that, punitive damages shouldn't be considered taxable income. But as often happens in these, landmark cases, the IRS, they weren't ready to just give up. So they appealed the decision. And eventually the case, it landed in the highest court in the land.
The Supreme Court. So that's how Commissioner v. Glenshaw Glasco became the pivotal case that it is. So the Supreme Court, they had to grapple with this really fundamental question.
They did?
What exactly constitutes taxable income under the law?
A very important question.
Were they swayed by, these companies' arguments about fairness? Or did they ultimately side with the IRS in kind of a broader interpretation?
Well, in a landmark decision, a decision that really reverberates through the legal system to this day, the Supreme Court, they sided with the IRS. But it wasn't just a simple rubber stamp. Their reasoning is what makes this case so impactful. It really all boils down to a concept that, continues to shape tax law today. And that concept is accessions to wealth.
Accessions to wealth. I like it. Break that down for us. What does that mean?
Okay, so the court essentially said that if you receive money and you gain control over it, or what they called dominion, it's likely taxable regardless of how you got that money. So it doesn't matter if it's like earned income, investment gains, or even, as in this case, a financial award because of someone else's wrongdoing.
So the source of the money is less important than the fact that you've got it and you can use it.
That's the gist of it, yeah.
Okay, I see how that logic could apply in a lot of different situations.
Right.
But it also raises some questions. I mean, didn't the Supreme Court consider like the fairness of this?
Yeah.
Like taxing punitive damages. Some people might see that as punishing the victim,
Right.
not just the wrongdoer.
Yeah, you've hit on a really crucial point. The Supreme Court's decision in Glenshaw Glass, it highlights this tension that you often see in tax law, this balance between, fairness and the government's need to generate revenue. And in this case, the court prioritized a broad interpretation of taxable income. And they did so for some very specific legal reasons.
So it wasn't just a matter of like, hey, more money for the government. There were actual legal arguments behind this?
Absolutely there were.
This feels like a good place to, you know, kind of transition into the details of the Supreme Court's reasoning and how they justified this really expansive view of taxable income. We'll pick up there in part two.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It wasn't just about, you know, the government getting more money. The Supreme Court's reasoning was really grounded in, like, legal precedent and statutory interpretation. One of their main arguments focused on the language used in the tax code, specifically Section 22A of the Internal Revenue Code of 1939.
Okay. Section 22A, I have to admit, I haven't exactly memorized the entire tax code. What that section say?
Well, Section 22A defined gross income, and it included this very sweeping phrase, gains or profits and income derived from any source whatever.
Well, wow, any source whatever.
Yeah, and the Supreme Court, they really latched onto that phrase, arguing that it showed Congress's intention to tax all gains unless, you know, there was a specific exemption.
So if it wasn't explicitly excluded, the IRS could go after it.
Basically, yeah.
That's a pretty powerful argument. Did Glenshaw Glass and Goldman Theaters have any kind of legal counter-argument to that?
They did. They did. They pointed to this earlier case, Eisner v. McComber from 1920, which had defined income more narrowly, tying it to, you know, gains from capital or labor or a combination of both. But the Supreme Court, they distinguished Glenshaw Glass from that earlier case, saying that Eisner wasn't meant to be like the final word on what income is.
So they were basically saying times have changed, the tax code's evolved, and we need to think about income more broadly.
Exactly. And to strengthen their argument, they really delved into the nature of punitive damages.
Right.
They argued that, you know, while these payments are meant to punish the wrongdoer, for the person receiving them, it's a clear increase in their wealth.
Right. It's still money in your pocket.
Exactly. It increases your overall financial resources, you know, however you got it.
So that's where their famous Dominion test comes in, right?
That's right.
If you have control over the money, if you can use it, then it's taxable.
It doesn't matter where it came from or why.
Interesting. So the source of the funds, the intent behind them, all that becomes less important.
Yeah, less relevant.
Than whether or not it's considered taxable income.
Exactly. What matters is that you have dominion. But the Supreme Court didn't stop there.
Really?
They also dug into the legislative history of the tax code.
So they were looking not just at what the law said, but what the lawmakers intended.
Exactly. Trying to understand the intent behind it.
What did they find when they looked at that legislative history?
Well, they went through all those congressional records and found no evidence that Congress ever wanted to exempt punitive damages from taxes.
Interesting.
In fact, they highlighted that Congress had, like, reenacted Section 22A over and over without ever changing a broad definition of grow income.
So they were basically saying if Congress wanted to make punitive damages tax-free, they would have said so.
Right. They haven't. So we're going to stick to the plain language of the law.
And interpret it broadly.
Yes.
Okay. So they looked at the tax code's language, its history, and the economic reality of punitive damages.
Right.
And they built a pretty strong case for taxing them.
They did.
But you said earlier that Glenshaw Glass had implications way beyond just punitive damages.
It did, yeah.
How did this case, you know, really change the legal landscape when it comes to defining taxable income?
Well, that's where it gets really interesting. The principle of accessions to wealth from Glenshaw Glass. It's been used in all sorts of situations.
Okay.
Way beyond the facts of the case itself.
Wow.
It set a precedent for a much broader interpretation of what we consider taxable income.
So what are some other areas where Glenshaw Glass has had an impact? We talked about lottery winnings earlier.
Right.
Did this case affect how those are taxed?
Oh, absolutely. Lottery winnings are a classic example of a windfall.
Right. A sudden, unexpected gain.
Exactly. Most people wouldn't consider that earned income. But under the logic of Glenshaw Glass, there's still taxable income. You know, they increase your overall wealth. You have dominion over that money.
So that dream of winning the lottery and, you know, sailing off into the sunset.
Right.
Might need to factor in a pretty big tax bill.
You might want to think about that yacht a little more carefully.
Yeah, for sure. But it sounds like Glenshaw Glass goes even beyond these obvious windfall situations.
It does.
What are some less obvious areas where this case might come into play?
Well, let's think about personal injury settlements. Imagine you're in a car accident.
Okay.
And you get a settlement that includes money for, you know, pain and suffering.
Right.
Now, obviously, no amount of money can truly make up for that.
Of course not.
But many people might assume that those damages are tax-free.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like income in the traditional sense.
Right. It's not like you earned it through work.
So did the IRS ever try to apply Glenshaw Glass to these types of settlements?
They did. And in many cases, they've been successful.
Really?
Under this broad understanding of accessions to wealth.
Yeah.
Even damages for emotional distress or pain and suffering can be considered taxable income.
Wow.
Unless they're directly linked to physical injuries.
That's pretty surprising. It sounds like the IRS has a pretty powerful tool in Glenshaw Glass.
Right.
It seems like they can really broaden their definition of taxable income.
Yeah, they can capture gains that a lot of people wouldn't even think about as taxable.
But you mentioned earlier that this case has also had implications for illegal activities.
It has, yeah.
That seems a little strange.
It does, doesn't it?
Why would someone who made money illegally have to pay taxes on it?
It does seem counterintuitive, but the logic follows that Dominion test.
Okay.
So let's say someone embezzles a large sum of money.
Right.
Even though they got that money illegally,
yeah,
they still have control over it. They can still use it.
So even though they might be facing criminal charges, they still have to report that income to the IRS.
And potentially pay taxes on it.
That's fascinating. So Glenshaw Glass hasn't just affected the IRS. It's also influenced how courts interpret tax laws.
Absolutely.
And how people plan their finances.
It's had a huge impact on the legal landscape.
That's a really good point. It reminds us that tax law can be tricky.
It can be very complex.
And what might seem like a simple windfall or a straightforward settlement could have these unexpected tax consequences.
You never know.
So we've looked at how Glenshaw Glass affected punitive damages,
right,
lottery winnings, personal injury settlements, even illegal games.
Yeah.
But there's one area we haven't discussed yet. What are those non-monetary settlements you mentioned?
Right.
What happens when someone wins something besides cash in a lawsuit? Does Glenshaw Glass apply there too?
It absolutely does, and that's where we'll pick up in part three. Get ready to explore how that accessions to wealth principle applies to everything from real estate to intellectual property.
Okay, so we've established that Glenshaw Glass, it really kind of broadened the definition of taxable income, right? Went way beyond just those initial punitive damages.
It did, yeah. It opened up this whole world of taxable income.
And we were talking about situations where you don't just get a cash payment. What about those non-monetary settlements? You mentioned those earlier.
Right, right. That's where the implications of Glenshaw Glass get really interesting, especially, you know, for anyone dealing with complex legal or financial stuff. Remember that core idea,
yeah,
accessions to wealth. The IRS isn't just looking at cash.
Uh-huh.
They're looking at any increase in your financial resources.
Okay.
No matter what form it takes.
So even if you win, say, a valuable piece of property in a lawsuit,
right,
the IRS still considers that taxable income.
Even though it's not cash, yeah. Absolutely.
So you're basically saying you've received something valuable that you didn't have before.
Right.
That increases your overall financial position.
Exactly.
Let's say, for example, you win a beachfront condo in a lawsuit.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
That's a nice settlement.
Not bad.
I can see why the IRS might be interested.
Yeah, I think so.
But how do they even determine how much to tax when it's not just a simple cash transaction?
Well, that's where this idea of fair market value comes in.
Okay.
The courts would look at what that property would probably sell for. Oh. On the open market.
Okay.
And that amount, that's considered taxable income.
Even though you haven't actually received any dollars?
Right. It's about the underlying value.
So whether it's cash, real estate, stocks, even intellectual property, if it increases your net worth.
The IRS is probably going to see it as taxable income.
Exactly. It's not about the form of the gain. It's about the value itself.
That's it. Yeah.
And that's why Glenshaw Glass is still such a landmark case.
It really is.
Cited in all these legal disputes and tax controversies.
All the time.
It lays out this framework,
right,
for figuring out what is and isn't taxable income.
Yeah, it's really important.
Sounds like the IRS is a pretty strong tool with Glenshaw Glass.
Yeah, you could say that.
They can define income pretty broadly.
Uh-huh.
Capture gains that most people wouldn't think are taxable.
Right, it's a powerful tool.
But I think it's also important to remember.
Yeah.
The IRS isn't just trying to, you know, take every penny from taxpayers.
Right. That's not the goal.
Glenshaw Glass, it helps to, like, level the playing field.
In a way, yeah.
Make sure everyone's treated fairly under the law.
Regardless of how they get their wealth.
That's a really important point.
Yeah.
It's about applying the law consistently.
Right.
And making sure everyone's contributing their fair share.
Exactly. And it highlights how important it is.
Yeah.
To get expert advice when you're dealing with, you know, complicated financial stuff.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
What might seem like a straightforward settlement or inheritance could have, like, hidden tax implications.
Wow, this deep dive has been really eye-opening.
It's a fascinating case.
We went from this 1955 Supreme Court case
right.
to this, like, core principle
uh-huh.
that shapes so much of our tax system.
It's really amazing.
It's incredible how one ruling can have such a huge impact.
I know. It's amazing how these things ripple outward.
Shaping the legal landscape for, like, decades.
For sure. So as we wrap up yep. our exploration of Commissioner v. Glenshaw Glasgow.
What's the one key takeaway you want our listeners to remember? What's the big lesson here?
I'd say the most important takeaway is this. When it comes to taxes, don't make assumptions. If you've got a significant gain,
okay.
whether it's cash, property, or even something less tangible,
yeah.
don't just assume it's not taxable. Talk to a professional.
Right.
Understand the law.
Good advice.
And make informed decisions. Glenshaw Glass reminds us
yeah.
that the definition of income can be really broad.
Much broader than we think.
So it's always better to be cautious.
Wise words. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.
My pleasure.
Into the fascinating world of Commissioner v. Glenshaw Glasgow. Until next time, keep those legal brains buzzing.
Keep learning.
And remember, when in doubt, consult a tax professional.